Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deer
and Donald Dalton. This episode, we are going to talk about intuition, and David and I were kind of doing our pre-show conversation, and this topic just kept, you know, showing its head and like, it's my time. So we actually had another topic scheduled, but we will get to that in the future. So David, if you feel comfortable doing so, can you kind of give a recap of what we had started talking about before we started recording?
Yes, sure. Before the show, Donald and I, we usually just kind of see, you know, check in, see how the week has been going for either of us and what have we been up to. And he was following up on my weekend. And last Saturday, I performed a ceremony. I officiated a wedding ceremony for a couple. And he had asked me if that is fun, if it is a fun to officiate a wedding. And for some reason, the picture, when Donald said fun, the picture in my mind was of roller coasters. Ironically, I don't find roller coasters fun, but I kind of, you know, had that same picture as a party in, and yeah, woo, that's something you'd make you go, woo. But, and so it didn't really resonate with me. And I said, well, I would consider it very enjoyable. And then we could, of course, go into a conversation about the semantics of any difference between what is fun and what is enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing a difference. And I thought, you know, the reason I couldn't describe it as fun is because it's not for me per se. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, if I go and seek out, I'll go and seek out something for fun. I'll go and seek out something that I find entertaining. I was sought out in every single case where I've done officiating. I've been asked. I've never offered. Mm-hmm. And I agreed to do it, and I'm usually pretty selective about it. And then where this goes into the intuition part is that I was talking about how, for me, officiating is a very intuitive process. I am intuitively connecting to the couple themselves and to who they are and into what message I would resonate best with them during the ceremony. And that's what I was saying is an intuitive process. And why don't you kind of take it from there, what to kind of where the conversation was going?
And I think from there, we started talking about how you made the comment that it doesn't come from you. And, you know, okay, when we're talking about the officiating the ceremony, you're talking about the focus being on the couple. And I was like, oh, yeah, totally. And then you're saying the focus was not on you, and so you don't take any credit for the intuition part that flowed through you to create the words that you came up with. And this is where, that's the part where I started saying, whoa, hold on. Hold on. You have to take a little bit of credit for that, and from my perspective, because if you don't take credit for being able to be a vessel for those words to come through for this couple or any couple, then it's like the sink not taking credit for running your water because you can get it somewhere else.
Well, I do understand what you're saying. I know what you're saying, that is important to acknowledge in oneself what one is able to create. And I do know that I created the charge for the couple, and I formed the ceremony in a way that no one else on this planet could.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
However, anybody else that performed a ceremony would do it in no way of any that anyone else could. So,
but there's a difference.
The difference is just unique. The difference is between individuals.
No, I look at it this way. You said that this couple and every couple that you've officiated for have asked you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, they must see something in you or have a feeling about you that they want to bring into their wedding, which, you know, is like, one of the milestones in a person's life is to, make a commitment to another person in front of friends and family and everyone else. And so they felt that you would be the perfect fit for creating the type of space that they wanted to have, that they would feel would be very strong for that kind of a commitment and that kind of a ceremony. They may have asked other people, they may not have, I don't know. But the thing is, they sought you out And if you did not do that, if they did not even know that you've officiated weddings or whatever, then they would not have sought you out, and you would have this skill, this ability that it would always be there, you know, wanting to be, you know, utilized.
Oh, I understand that. And I know what you're saying. There was something about me that resonated with them, that mm-hmm. drew them to me, and that in and of itself is an intuitive process. What I'm saying is that I cannot take sole credit for that. And this is what I'm very deliberate about.
Sole credit. Okay, gotcha.
I cannot be, because that, I think, is a dangerous thing. I do believe I have an ability, and I do believe my intuition is very honed with working with words and language.
You got mad skills,
in a
man.
Specific way. I won't knock the ability that I have to do that. And it's been affirmed by other people, which is all well and good. But at the same time, it can't stand on its own. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm saying.
You're saying it has to be applied to something that you care about.
Yeah, that's a good chunk of it. What I'm also saying is that there is a wellspring from which I grab that I can't necessarily say it's 100% me. And let me illustrate it this way.
Okay.
When I came up with the charge, I don't sit there and go, okay, what am I going to say? I might actually, you know, I've done that. I've said, okay, what do I want to say here? But it's more so that I just kind of, I just say, I just want to be able to speak to them, mm-hmm. to their hearts. And then I just kind of let it go there. And once I do that, the words just seem to be there.
Yeah.
I've gone back and read lyrics and poems that I've written. I don't write much poetry anymore, but I've listened and read lyrics that I've written going, I don't know how that came out of me. I don't know where that came from. It seemed like it came from somewhere else. And I acknowledge that I wrote them,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, the source of them, there's something beyond just myself that is the source of it. And I think that's, like, for example, let's take people who do intuitive readings. Somebody goes to somebody and says, I want to know if I'm going to come into money. I want to know if I'm going to stop having financial struggles. So then this person all of a sudden sees these images in their mind. We'll just take a kind of a visual intuitive.
Okay.
That has, say, a picture of a boulder rolling down a hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
At top speed. And it's crushing things. And the intuitive says, okay, this is what I see. And the intuitive says, it sounds like what's going on in your life is this, this, and this. And the person affirms it and says, well, yeah. And then they walk away from the reading saying, you know, this intuitive really nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the intuitive has the ability and the skills to tap into those pictures and to interpret them and to be able to allow themselves to open up and connect with another person. But where did those pictures come from? Where did the information come from that had to do with that person? Can the intuitive take 100% credit for that?
I'm going to try this analogy and see if it works. I look at it where intuition and any kind of psychic ability or intuitive ability, there has to be a setup in the intuitive, in the psychic, in their physical, emotional, mental, spiritual makeup that allows them to connect to, like, the Akashic records or this wellspring of knowledge where this information does come from. Kind of like they're the receiver on, like, a little, you know, jukebox radio where the universe is constantly transmitting all this information on every frequency, and they are just able to tune in to this specific person with this specific question. And so, to answer your question, I find it very difficult to say that the intuitive should not take credit for it, but at the same time, if they did not have that matrix set up inside of them in one way or another, then they would not be able to offer what they offer. And to a large degree, many intuitives, many psychics want to help and do so out of a desire to give information that others might have difficulty finding. It's like if you run into a legal problem, you don't go to a doctor, you go to a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lawyer has the knowledge and ability of the legal system that, you know, hopefully you're of the place that you're in, just like, you know.
I go to doctors for legal advice. I do, because I the laws of the pancreas are immutable, and I don't want to break those laws.
So would you say that the knowledge and advice that you get from a lawyer, or if you have a medical issue that you go to a doctor for, that's not from them, that it's coming from somewhere else?
It depends on the doctor. It really does, because I have encountered doctors, and actually attorneys too, I have encountered that are very clinical, and I've also encountered some that are very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the difference, and I will elaborate on this. The clinical ones, yeah, you can trust me on that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look who we're talking about. The clinical ones will go down a checklist. Okay, these are your symptoms. It doesn't match these symptoms, or it does. Your symptoms do or don't match this particular condition. And then they'll prescribe a certain set of remedies according to. So what they've done is they've kind of turned pages in their encyclopedia of knowledge, check it against a cross-reference of what they have learned, mm-hmm. and then send you on your way with a particular diagnosis and treatment. The intuitive doctors will kind of start leaning towards something that they believe is going on, even though, you know, it could be X, Y, and Z, but an intuitive doctor would say, you know, it feels more like Z to me. It feels, and there's the intuition and feeling are just, they live in the same camp. They have the same mailing address. So I think that's the difference here is that when you're intuitive, you no longer feel that you can only depend on facts.
With the intuitive doctor, who is having a sense of, you know, a leaning towards one diagnosis or another of, you know, what could be causing the ailment, where is that feeling coming from?
Here's where I think it's coming from. I think it's an openness to connect. And the interesting thing is, in the medical profession, there is this, I don't know if it's learned or unspoken, but there's this idea of keeping a wall between the doctor and the patient because they don't want to get too emotionally invested,
mm-hmm.
as it were. Because if the idea is if they become emotionally invested, then they cannot be clinical and objective in their treatment or in their diagnosis.
That's why you never treat family members.
Well, yeah, and there's that kind of idea. You don't treat family members, they say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the intuitive, if it's dealing with feeling, in my opinion, when you're being intuitive, like when I'm coming up with a charge in a ceremony for a couple, you have to open yourself up to a degree to connect to them,
mm-hmm.
you see. And that's where I think the difference is that you – the it's the what really is in the capabilities of the intuitive – is the decision and the choice to open oneself up to be to another person on an energetic level.
And this is what I was talking about before the show, is because that is coming from you. That choice is coming, is, you know, when you were writing the charge for this couple for their wedding ceremony, was coming from you, that allowed the intuition to present itself. That was kind of my whole thing is, and I agree with you, it's not solely you, because intuition, I believe, comes from, to take a Star Wars reference, the Force, the universe as a whole, you know, has certain ways to guide people along the path that is in their highest interest. Such as if you go to a psychic and you ask them a question, if they are reputable, then they will connect to their higher self to give you the information that is in your best interest for that time. And that's basically the whole thing I was talking about, is allowing yourself to be open to that channel of information as opposed to being more clinical and just going down a checklist.
I was very careful with that conversation that we had before the show. Interestingly enough, we're kind of folding back into our original conversation that we were going to have tonight, which was going to be about the subconscious and the ego.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say the subconscious and the intuition are kind of second cousins of sorts. Some people think they're synonymous, but I don't. But then
they
there's
like
the ego.
Each other. They think each other's kind of purdy.
Yeah, it's like, people, let me tell you about my best friend, subconscious and the ego, and they're walking hand in hand. Enough. So now, I meant to say subconscious and intuition, but too many syllables for that little song. But Interestingly enough, that we decided to talk about intuition rather than subconscious and the ego, because the ego to me is kind of that. The ego is the can be the wrench in the works as far as intuition goes. And that's why I was saying about taking credit. I do believe owning what you are capable of doing. I do believe owning who you are and what you can do, and embracing your gifts and your talents and saying, I am absolutely grateful that I have been bestowed and blessed with this. But what I'm saying is like on an intuitive level, when you're working with your intuition, your ego, and when you start, you know, kind of aggrandizing yourself, as it were, your ego can actually play a counter role to a healthy functioning intuition.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And, you know, from what I've heard you in our conversation before the show is you weren't giving yourself any credit. I wasn't expecting you to, you know, say, oh, yeah, it's all me. It's, yeah, I'm pretty good. Da, 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 da. You know, I wasn't expecting that, you know, but I saw it's like, you know, it's not me. It's something I kind of do, and, you know, it's okay. And it's like, David, you can be humble, but you can also take credit for your abilities and everything. And I think that's kind of what sparked kind of the interest in this particular conversation, where we decided, hey, let's do this topic tonight.
Okay.
It is because, you know, it's so easy to not give yourself enough credit in anything you do.
What is the definition of enough credit then? When are you giving yourself enough credit, and when are you not giving yourself enough credit? In other words, when do you fill the prerequisite or the required, that's a better word, the required quotient of how much credit you should give yourself?
I think that comes down to a personal balance with every individual, because every individual has a line that can cross, like you were talking about earlier, where their abilities go from a place of humbleness to hubris. Mm-hmm. You can walk that line very carefully, or you can stay far on one, or you can stay far on the other end. For me personally, having worked and developed my intuition in many areas most of my life, it is one of those things where it's constantly like, wow, I was right about that. And like, well, yeah, you're kind of good at that. And like, yeah, I'm getting too close to being, you know, getting a big head about it and everything. Okay, so yeah, it's just something I do. In the past year or so, I've started being a little more open to that. Like, yes, I'm pretty good at that, but I'm not the only one. There's other people that do this, and there's other people that do that. So for me personally, it's been more of a finding a balance between saying, yes, I'm good at what I do, but I'm not the only one who does what I do, and I'm not the only one that's good at it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that keeps my personal ego in balance. I'm not going to say at bay, because, you know, I don't want to be like, oh, it's a huge monster I'm trying to wrangle down, because, you know, then it's kind of like something I'm fighting with, and I'm not fighting with it. I want to make friends with the ego, work in conjunction with the ego, to have the ego allow the intuition to come through, but at the same time, allow the ego, its propers, to take a certain amount of credit for being able to have the skill and ability and, you know, the positive influence that it can have on other people.
Well, what I want to do is I want to dive into a little bit more of this idea of the ego and the intuition, because something tells me there are listeners out there that are really curious about this topic. For people who like the subject matter that we talk about, the intuition is a really, really, it piques a lot of curiosity, and a lot of people want to know how they can develop their intuition. And that's why I want to talk about the ego being, it has its place. And in one way, there's a difference between, to me, sometimes ego and self-confidence. Ego, to me, is a very, it's self-preservation. Self-confidence, I think a better word for self-confidence, where people say you should have self-confidence, I think of it more self-trust rather than self-confidence.
Oh, okay.
Or even trust, because you can trust yourself and no one else. That tells me you don't really trust yourself. That's my opinion. So trust is very global. You can't trust everyone else and not yourself, and you can't trust yourself and not anyone else. Trust is a very blanket thing. Now, The ego is all about self-preservation, and the ego tends to, in my opinion, work from fear. And fear is one of the biggest threats to the intuition. Because once the crazy thing is intuition's so difficult to validate. It really is. I mean, the naysayers and the James Randis will come out of the woodworks and they'll say, prove that thing there that you just said. And then another person says, well, I just had a reading from them and they were spot on. And then James Randi says, prove that they were spot on to you. You know, you just believe it. That doesn't make it fact. Really?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would add that the James Randis and the Michael Shermers are more of prove it scientifically beyond any shadow of the doubt in the context of the scientific method.
Well, that's all fine and well, but I would challenge them to see if science is infallible.
Yeah, exactly.
If science were infallible, then it would be an excellent method, but science is not infallible, and actually neither is intuition. Mm-hmm. Intuition is not infallible because it comes through our humanity. Mm-hmm. And as humans and being fallible, and there are hardly any humans, I say hardly any, I don't know. We could go back to the Ascended Masters thing and talk about that. But as far as humans go, because we have that ego and because we live in fear, in some cases in our lives, or many depending on the person, we're subject to error. And on our intuition, once fear plays into our intuition, it's probably going to be subject to error.
Oh, yeah. And that's why for the longest time, any psychic or intuitive or medium that has come out and said that I'm 100% accurate 100% of the time, I'm just like, okay, my BS bells are going off. And I'm like, this is where I turn into James Randi and Michael Shermer and say, prove it. Because yeah. I find it very difficult for anybody that is human, and I'm going to say that, to have 100% intuitive information that they can express to others 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. There are those that can do, 80 to 90% 100% of the time, and there are those that can give information that is 100% accurate 80 to 90% of the time. And that's really, really, really good. That's what most people would consider proficient. If you are going around saying that you can do give 100% accurate information 100% of the time without fail, that's where I say, okay, this is kind of the ego coming in a little bit there. I'm curious, have you heard or met anyone that you feel can even remotely come up to 100% accuracy 100% of the time, or how do you feel about that statement?
Well, here's how I feel about that. When you talk about the accuracy of it, it has to be measured. Let me see how I can put this. The validate accuracy of an intuitive reading.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really validate what's accurate. You have to take an objective stance. In other words, you have to compare it against facts. And the kind of readings you get that you can compare about facts are, they said that this was going to happen, and they said that that was going to happen, and they said that all these things, or they said, they told me that I was related to someone named Edgar or, Bartholomew. Those kind of things. Those are the 100% accuracy things. Here's my thing about intuition and how, its usefulness.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a reader and they said, okay, you have a sister. If they said to me, you have a sister named X, you have a mother named Y, you have so-and-so family members. You did this, you went to grade school and this. And they said, your reading's over. Here, pay me my $75. I'd be like, well, what did you just tell me? You told me what I already knew. Okay, yeah, you're 100% accurate. You knew things that you shouldn't have been able to know, but so what?
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people don't go to an intuitive there are people who go to the intuitives to see if they're, they can play the testing game.
Mm-hmm.
People who like to test intuitives. What's the point of that? To me, it's when you have people that go to intuitives, they're usually going because they want to find out how to overcome a challenge in their life. And the information you give, the only way you can validate its accuracy is if they apply the wisdom that you gave them and it was successful. But it's really up to the individual getting the reading rather than giving the reading.
That's why I have that belief where, anyone that comes out that says 100% accuracy 100% of the time, going with along with what you said, the accuracy for any reading is, you know, subjective to the one that's being read for, in my opinion. And so if I go to a psychic and I get a reading, the accuracy of what they tell me, unless it's recorded and, you know, scrutinized all over the place, is valid only to the degree that I give it validity for. What I do with that information is then, I would say, the more important thing. But for any one person to impress upon another person how accurate they are every time with every person in every reading, you know, that's kind of where I'm coming from with that statement. It's just like there are so many different people from so many different areas, and that, you know, it's almost, you know, if the person being read for is told one fact by the reader and they say, oh, see, they're good. Mm-hmm. You know, other people would be like, well, in a half hour reading, you know, I was told one thing out of maybe, 70 different things or 70 points that mentioned, and all of them were false except one. And other people who go, you know, have a different feeling where they go and they get, oh, yeah, 30 of them were correct out of probably about 50 that they mentioned. This is where I kind of pull that, because there are so many different people that are have so many different subjective views on intuitive readers. And if you pulled 100 people off the street, sat them down in front of a reader, they would give a different level of accuracy based on, one, the information that the reader gave them, and two, on what they think is the correct answer, so that they don't lose face and people don't think they're crazy. Mm-hmm. Those two things right there, you know, influence, you know, the what I would consider the accuracy of any one reader.
About accuracy? What about success of a reading? And I would say an accurate reading is like, so what, but a successful reading is that the person walk away from that saying, I feel a little more empowered now.
Ah, yeah, and this goes back to our divination episode where we're talking about giving away power to people who do readings for people.
Was that responsibility?
Well, that one too.
Yes, all of the above.
We have a few episodes where we've mentioned this whole idea. I'm going to restate what you just said, is a successful reading is where the person that was being read for feels empowered to do something with their life in one way or another, or is it just a feeling of empowered from a reading?
Well, I'd say a little of both, actually. Here's what's interesting about intuitive readings, in my opinion. My personal belief is that when you go to get an intuitive reading, mm-hmm. what people seem to look for from an intuitive is if they can give them information that they should have not had from the beginning, if that information was intuitive from the beginning. The interesting thing is I don't think it's ever new information. I think it's information that comes from somebody objective that doesn't have any role in their life.
Oh.
So the wow factor is like, I can't believe you knew this about me and this this particular challenge that I'm undergoing, and that you could see that that was an obstacle. But I guarantee you, they knew the obstacle was there well before they went and got that intuitive reading. It's almost like you had to hear it from somebody else, because you hear somebody, you know, your best friend sitting there saying, you know, you really need to dump that guy because da 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 da. and you're just like, my best friend just hates him, you know. So then you go to an intuitive reader, and the intuitive reader says, I see that you're in a relationship with a person, and it looks like this is going to be a challenge for you because this person has this particular focus in mind, which is actually seems to be pulling them away from what you want out of a relationship. So, and then when you walk away, if the person still says, but I love him, and they stay with him, then that you basically can flush that reading, you know, down the drain.
I don't know. Because are we talking about the accuracy of the reader or the accuracy of what the person that's being read for does with the information?
It's not a matter of accuracy with what they do with the information. It's a matter of choice with what they do with the information.
Exactly. So to me, it looks like the only thing that you can really base the how good a reading is if the reader seems to have opened up and really connected with you on a level that you would not have expected them to after meeting them for saying, hi, how you doing? All right, sitting down. And there you go. Because we have this idea, this concept, that to know intimate details about someone's life, you have to actually tell somebody, or they have to go around the rumor mill. for someone that is not connected to your group of influence to all of a sudden be able to say, oh, this, and this, then we find that unexpected, and therefore you say, oh, that was a good reading because it was unexpected information. I'm going to kind of move the conversation a little bit off of the whole divination, good reading, bad reading, whatever reading type thing.
I'm good with that.
What I'm curious about now is I believe that everybody has a certain level of intuition. Mm-hmm. I believe it's just there's something, an innate ability that everyone is born with.
Right.
There are those that choose to develop it. There are those who don't. There are those that do have focuses on other parts of their life than that, and that's all fine. But for the people that might want to be more proficient, develop, find their natural intuitive abilities, what would you suggest to someone of that, like that?
The trick is, a lot of it is trust.
Hmm.
Because, again, and that's what I was setting up for earlier in the conversation, is that when we are looking for validation by facts of our intuition, it's not easy to substantiate your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you second guess your intuition, then you'll never really know it. If you can trust your intuition. And the other part of it, too, is check to see if something comes to you. If something comes into your mind, or if you kind of get a sense of something, is that a sense of something due to fear?
Oh.
And if there's an element of fear behind it, it very likely isn't your intuition. Because the reason I say that is the universe has no fear.
Wouldn't physical survival be something that would possibly create a feeling of fear that could come through intuitive channels?
Well, yes, but here's the thing about that. Is it going to move you towards joy, or is it going to move you away, trying to avoid fear? And when I talk about fear, I'm talking about worrying about something that who knows if it's going to happen to you. There's a sense of, a lot of people get that hunch, don't do this today.
Don't walk under a ladder. Don't walk under a ladder. If a black cat, crosses your path, you're screwed.
That's superstition. That's a little bit different. No, I'm talking about have you ever done that where you just had a sense that you weren't supposed to, that you shouldn't do something?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I'll give you an example, actually, of really strong intuition. Okay. This is my mother. My mother's brother passed away a couple of weeks ago. And she knew that he wasn't doing very well and that she needed to go see him because she didn't know how much longer he would be alive. Her husband said, let's look for, and this is in London, from here, Seattle. And her husband said, well, let's see, we can get you a flight to London. And she said, all right, I need to get the quickest direct flight that I can. He said, well, that's going to cost twice as much. And she says, I need to go in the quickest direct flight I can. The way she described it to me is she felt that she didn't really have a choice in the matter, that she had to.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know how long he was going to be alive. She didn't know that he was close to dying. She didn't know that he wasn't going to be around for another week. She just knew that his days were numbered.
Mm-hmm.
But she felt this imperative sense to get there as soon as possible. And she did. She got there and she got to the hospital and he died 2 hours later.
Wow.
So, and she said, I knew that I had to get there because I just knew. I knew that I needed to be there. That was an intuition. That wasn't fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I know what you're saying. It's like, is it a fear-based saying if you say, don't get on that bus, for example. Don't get on that bus. And if you'd gotten out of the bus, it turns out that they arrested a guy who was, stabbing people or something. I don't know. That isn't fear. That's basically, it's not your time, or two, this is going to drive you away from joy in a way that you can, if you trust your intuition, then you'll know whether it's you being afraid of something or your intuition. Here's another example. I just got a new scooter.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. I had not ridden it very far, and I've never ridden a motorcycle or anything
that.
And I never have. But I got this scooter, and I was really excited, and I had to go a couple of miles across town to take care of something, and I was really petrified to get on that scooter. And I said, is this my intuition that's saying something's going to happen, or is it my fear?
Hmm.
Well, I wasn't nervous about anything like that until a gentleman that I work with had died in a motorcycle accident about a month ago. And so that's been kind of hovering, and I knew that it was just me being nervous, me being afraid of something happening, but it was based on this historical piece. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It was based on, if somebody says, don't go to work today, if you get this message, don't go to work today, not because you don't want to get out of bed, but something just doesn't feel right about going to work, but there's nothing wrong with going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, you've never had somebody, you don't have a, you know, guy holding you up at gunpoint every single day at work. So, you know, work is a pretty safe environment, but something says don't go to work today. That's probably your intuition. Does that differentiate the fear versus the, you know, the survival?
Probably not, because the last thing you mentioned, you know, I actually had a time years and years ago where, you know, I was a delivery driver for a little chain, a little local chain where I was living at the time. And basically, I woke up, it said, you should go back to bed. And like, but I got to get up and go to work. Like, you should not worry about work today. It was such a strong feeling that I basically called in and said, I won't be coming into work today. This is one of those jobs that has very low, you know, job security type things. And they're like, well, you know, if you don't want to come into work today, you don't need to come into work for the rest of, well, forever. And so I was like, I don't want to lose my job, so I'm going to go into work. Basically, what had happened is a couple hours of delivering, it was raining a little bit. I hydroplaned off the road into some my car, and then my car ricocheted off of some rocks that were some of the barriers, started heading back towards the road towards oncoming traffic, and stopped where the bumper was probably about half a foot onto the road. It totaled the car. The car was completely gone. That basically ended that job. For me, it was kind of one of those weird things where it's just like, I was told intuitively, my intuition was saying, don't go into work today, but the fear of losing my job made me go into work that day, but I ended up losing my job anyway because I lost my vehicle and to do the job. Mm-hmm. The other example that I have is, of course, my huge, huge car wreck that put me in the hospital for about 10 days, where I got home and I was just like, okay, this is a night just to watch like a double feature, rent a couple movies, you know, get a couple chips, you know, and just veg out. And then an acquaintance that I'd never really hung out with before, but, you know, I knew through social circles, said, just called me out of the blue. I'm like, this is weird. They've never called me before. I'm like, hey, you want to go hang out? Well, you know, me and a desire to socialize, I was like, yeah, let's go. I had that whole feeling of, yeah, you should stay home.
Did you not trust your intuition in either of those scenarios?
It wasn't that I did not trust my intuition. It's just that my logical, rational mind saw a bigger payoff going and going against my intuition than following my intuition.
Right.
And this is exactly. This is when it was still developing. This is like my early 20s. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was still one of those times where I had not gotten to the point where, as you said earlier, I trusted my intuition implicitly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was basically, well, I have this intuitive feeling like I should stay home tonight, or I could go hang out with a bunch of people that I really love and love to socialize, and that would be really fun. You know, it'd be kind of like, well, I can stay home and watch a couple movies, or I could go win the lottery. you know, it's like rational mind and intuitive mind.
It's funny you say that, because one of the things you asked about was, you asked about kind of developing your intuition. And I do honestly believe that a really good way of developing your intuition is by changing your vocabulary.
Ah.
And I'm going off of what you were just talking about, because I can imagine that at one point you probably said, I should have stayed home, right?
Oh, numerous times, actually.
Well, here's the thing is when you, if you remove the word should from your vocabulary,
oh yeah,
you will find your intuition heightening quickly.
You know what?
You know what I mean by that?
You know what? I had not thought of that, but it wasn't until probably a few years ago when I took the whole shoulda, woulda, couldas out of my vocabulary on a regular basis for the most part. And I did notice that when I took those shouldas, I should have done this, I could have done that, I would have done this, but, you know, yeah, my intuition skyrocketed, just like you were saying, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it may not make sense to some people, the idea of eliminating the word should. And I have a blog post on that. but it's really powerful, because what happens is we start looking at the basis of our decisions. And for example, I don't think you said, I should go out with my friends. You said, I want to go out with my friends.
Mm-hmm. I basically said, I'm going out with my friends, even though I have this feeling of I shouldn't.
Right, exactly. It's like, and it didn't even say, I bet you it didn't say you shouldn't go out with your friends. It just said, it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, exactly.
Your intuition never says should. And that's the other
thing. Exactly.
If you feel the word should, then it's probably not intuitive. It's probably based on something fear or a social contract or one of those kind of things.
And I'd also add the word maybe.
Maybe. How would you add the word maybe?
This goes in with decision making with me, where getting in touch with your internal guidance system, your gut feeling, which, you know, comes from, in my belief system, your intuition. If you use the word maybe, then you're always on the fence, which does not allow your body to react to a yes or no, because it's always on a maybe. And for me, what I've learned is, if you have a decision to make, you want to see if you're using your intuition or if it's just your mind, you know, take the word maybe out and go totally with one choice, let's say choice A, and see how your body reacts to that. See how you feel. Where you actually imagine yourself doing that, you actually start walking and you do the first step in taking that choice A. And then, depending on what it is, then you take choice B and you take the first small step in that and see how your body feels. And your body, every cell in your body, is intimately connected to your higher self and your life path. Wherever you're going against your life path, you know, if you've ever tried to walk against the flow of the river, there's more pressure there and it's more difficult. Whereas if you walk with the flow of river, then it's like that. And this is kind of like the same thing, where if you start to make the first small step on choice A, and you know, you feel pressure, that's probably going against your intuition, against your life path. And if you go with choice B and that feels much lighter and much easier, then that would definitely be going with it. And this is one way that you can also start, you know, developing your intuition, because one thing I have found is that developing any kind of intuition or many of these psychic or intuitive abilities does not like ambiguity, does not like maybes, does not like, oh, well, it's possible, but you know. It likes more direct type scenarios. Now, you can always say, well, it might be or it might not be, but for me personally, I've learned that taking the whole maybes, shoulda, wouldas, and couldas out has perfected. Well, I don't want to use the word perfected.
Well,
I don't like the word.
I do want to back up a little bit to what you said here, because and we talked a little bit about this too in the free will episode, but I do want to address what we said last week and what you said this week, and I want to clarify it.
Okay.
When you said that if you take your life path, if you follow the course laid out by your higher self, that you will find a bit of an easier course.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe that's true, but I don't mean it's free and clear. I don't think that means that you're free and clear for the rest of your life.
Oh, no. No. You still got to work.
Well, I'm not talking about work. I'm talking about things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to come up against things that you don't like, that where you have to make very difficult choices. It's going to happen. That's life.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want people to think that if I follow my intuition, you know, it's going to be all flowers and roses and chipmunks and leprechauns and, you know, and Cocoa Krispies and whatever else.
Cocoa Krispies, really?
I don't know where that came from. I started talking about leprechauns, and I started talking about, oh, that's a cereal guy. I should have said Lucky Charms. Cocoa Krispies. I don't remember. Is that the guy with the? Is that the Count Chocula?
No, I think that's Count Chocula, and then there's Cocoa Puffs and Cocoa Fruity Pebbles, or Cocoa Pebbles, and.
Well, is it? Well, it's a Cocoa Krispies. The Rice Krispies are the elves, right?
Oh yeah, Cocoa Krispies. I haven't eaten.
Are they
cereal.
The black elves or something? I don't understand. I mean, what was the mascot for the Cocoa Krispies?
I think it was the same guys. They just had a different coloring on the box.
No, they should have a different coloring on the elves. If you're gonna do, you know, white Rice Crisp treats, then you get white elves, and then the Cocoa Krispie treats, you get, you know, dark elves.
I'm just
the way this needs to go.
I'm
writing to Kellogg's.
Yeah, I'm picturing Snap, Crackle, and Pop from the Hood.
It would be Oh Snap, and it would be Lock and Pop. You know, it's
like, Yo Crackle.
Yeah, so that's, I think, you know, they really need to work on that. So anyway, I really digressed with our cereal kind of thing. I don't know where that tied into intuition. So, you know, if you feel compelled to buy the Cocoa Krispies or something. No, what I was saying is that I think we have to be careful about, you know, thinking that we're not going to have any challenges in life.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, if anything, well, I know, I don't, we want to say
You know
that.
What, for me, I agree with you completely, because life happens and life is full of challenges. You can't escape the challenges. But I think, you know, kind of what I'm referring to, and a lot of other people are referring to, when they say your life path will be will make things easier, I think we should take the word easier out and say more fulfilling. Mm-hmm. You'll get a greater sense of, you know, joy out of life. In other words, you'll still have challenges. You'll still have stuff that you'll have to work through and everything like that. And, you know, it'll be difficult on, you know, but it'll be more fulfilling, as opposed to, you know, still having those challenges and not having a rewarding or fulfilling life.
I think you'll be better equipped to handle those challenges. But I mean, so in talking about the intuition, let's kind of go into the tail end of this and let's talk a little bit about what it is, what you think it is. Do you think it's a message from your higher self to what your life path is? Is that what intuition is?
I think intuition is the mechanism through which we receive messages from our soul, our higher self, and the universe at large.
Now, do you say messages? What about information?
Well, messages have information.
They do, but I mean, but is information and messages synonymous?
In that statement, I would make them synonymous, yes.
Okay. All right, I'll quit interrupting you then.
Oh, no problem. I was pretty much done.
Okay.
It would be like me saying, what is the use of the internet, as opposed to what is our intuition? Well, the use of the internet is an enormous amount of knowledge literally at our fingertips. Kind of like using the use of internet is connected to a wealth of knowledge of the universe that we can click into or tap into in one way or another to help illuminate the path that we're on just a little bit more than, you know, if we are blindly going in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also use this for, you know, every event and everything that we, every part of life. If you go to a different country and, you know, they put a bowl of something in front of you, and am I going to like this? Well, let's see. We can go with our physical senses, and then we can go with our intuition and be like, no, I'm not going to like this.
Yeah, but sometimes it's worth it to experience it. It's like what we said last week. It's just because you put your hand in hot water, you didn't learn it was bad. You just learned it hurt. And then pain is, of course, subjective. If we think pain is bad, when pain is actually a form of a teacher, I don't know. It's like sometimes I think there are things that are worth experiencing, and I think there are things that we are better off experiencing for our own personal growth, one thing and then another.
I think intuition is, in one sense, is kind of like traffic lights. Here in America, if you're coming up to a red light, then, you know, that means stop. But if you're in an intersection, you can turn right, you can turn left, you can go forward. Unless you're at one of those 5 or 6 points where they all come together, you can go in a number of different ways. With that whole example that I mentioned earlier, somebody puts a foreign dish in front of you and you decide, you know, I'm not going to like this. You can still, you know, choose to eat it, and you might surprise yourself, because life is always full of surprises. The intuition is kind of a guide, how to follow your path most succinctly. But at the same time, you don't have to follow every little piece of intuition. Like, I'll give you another example. The comparison between trying a different food that you've never had before when you're on vacation, you know, in a different country, that's probably very low key compared to investing your life savings into one stock that you really have a really strong feeling about.
Really? Are you sure about that? Because as far as my understanding, in the spirit realm, they're all the same. Experience is experience, and it's just a matter of if there's spiritual growth behind it. I mean, maybe there is more spiritual growth behind tasting a certain kind of food than there is investing your stocks in one option, you see. I really think that intuition really is more in line with – when you use the analogy of a road,
mm-hmm.
you could say in one sense – that intuition is more like taking a freeway rather than taking the road with all the stoplights.
Oh,
but I wouldn't necessarily. It's fine to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
It is fine to imply that it's the faster way to go, but I would say this more. If I am not comfortable driving 65 or 75 or whatever the speed limit is, that's miles per hour for those of us that... So those of us that are in the archaic, you know, imperial system of measure.
What would that be, like 110 kilometers per hour or something? Or
I think it's 88. Actually, I think it's, well, 55 is like 88, I think.
Okay.
So we'll say 88 kilometers an hour. If you're uncomfortable going at higher speeds,
mm-hmm.
then the freeway is not the place for you to take. If you're not concerned with how long it takes to get there, and you know that hitting a lot of stoplights is going to be taking you at a lower speed, or if you like the little stopping breaks in between, if you like to kind of take a rest and it gives you a chance to relax at a stoplight and not have to focus on everything going around when you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying whatever's most comfortable, whatever you seem to tend toward, I think whatever we find flows with us, our intuition is in there. People say, oh, you know, this comes easily to me. That comes naturally to me. Your intuition is very likely linked to that.
Oh, yeah. It's like some people, you know, when you're talking about, you know, being on the interstate as opposed to being on city streets or even the back roads, some people in their life path like to take the scenic route.
Mm-hmm.
Their intuition will allow them to go that way. We can also bring the law of attraction into this, where if you're on the highway, things are going to come at you much faster. You know, things are going to happen significantly faster. You may or may not be ready to handle all that stuff depending on where you are and how open to your intuition and going along that path that you are, you know, that you're ready to do. Whereas, you know, going on the side streets or going at where you have traffic lights or even the back roads, that might be more at a pace of what you're talking of where you're comfortable with. And I think this is what you're talking about, where following your life path, you're following your intuition and going where it guides you. I agree. If you say, I do not want to get on the interstate of my life, I just mm-hmm. am not comfortable going 50, 60, 80, 90 miles an hour. Well, probably not 80, 90 miles an hour. I want something a little slower. Your intuition, your higher self, the universe will be like, okay, we will guide you. We'll be your little spiritual GPS, as it were, and we'll take out interstates from your path.
Absolutely. And I do believe that using the road analogy, If you're not comfortable on something, but you think you need to take it anyway, which is probably where the shoulds will come in, all of a sudden you'll find that, for example, if you're not one that should be driving on the interstate, and granted you're not comfortable doing it, but you really think you should, well, you're going to find out your intuition will tell you, and you'll probably ignore it because the shoulds are overriders. they're like that when the safety mechanism. There's a regulator. It's when that breaks. You're putting the override on the safety mechanism when you do your shoulds. So then what'll happen is you'll find that there will be a traffic jam. Will slow you up. There will be things that will start going outside of your intuition that will actually start happening in life. You know, this is a little tiny example. I was jet skiing out in Barbados. I had never been on a jet ski, and it was actually a lot of fun. But I'm not Mr. Coordinated, and if I get – which is all right, but if I get tired, if I get tired, my coordination massively suffers. and so as a result, I'm sitting there and I'm on this jet ski and I'm pounding the waves and it's giving me these little adrenaline rushes. And I'm not usually an adrenaline rush kind of guy, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to surrender to the moment. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, my intuition kicked in at one point and said, you're done. If you continue this, you're probably going to hurt yourself. Mm. So, but I kept going. I was like, you know, I got a half hour on this thing and da, 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 da. Yeah, it was half hours. That's all I could do. But then all of a sudden I found I came down and I just gashed my thumb, something wicked.
Ooh.
Right? And not really bad. It's just one of those kind of skin tear things, you know, but enough to keep the blood flowing nicely. And I was like, oh, okay. My intuition is taking it to the next level, saying, all right, let's give you a little bit of a louder flare. And I was like, yeah, all right. And I took the boat in and I got off and I realized that, yeah, I didn't need to be out there any longer. And I think that when we can see that, when we start watching for those kind of things, the things that get thrown in your way on your course, if you start watching that, that'll clue you in. If you backtrack a little and say, okay, was there something that told me to follow this before the obstacles started getting thrown in my path, you'll be able to identify what is your intuition at play. And the more often you can spot that, the more you can recognize it when it comes up in the future and know to actually trust it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because there'll be a type of it. Everybody has their own. It has its own signature. And that'll help you identify what the signature of your intuition is.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's perfectly said. Just a perfectal.
A perfectal.
It's a perfectal.
It's a perfectal.
That's a perfectal ending to a perfectal episode of Intuition. I like it. Yeah, it's very nice.
Perfectal said.
It's a new word, perfectal.
I like perfectal, yeah. It's a good word.
Fred McMulderberry told me about it yesterday.
Fred McMulderberry? You've been hanging out with him? Buying him frozen yogurts?
Dude, we've totally been chilling and hanging out. He's pretty cool.
Does he have a job?
He's got an awesome job.
How's his marriage?
We don't talk about that.
Oh, yeah. That's what I figured.
Why do you think he's hanging out with me so much?
All the single fellas.
Yeah, it's kind of like, if you want it, you should have given it a beer or something.
Yeah.
Instead of put a ring
like
on it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's bad. So, yeah. Anyway, so for David and I and TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, we'd like to thank all of our listeners, and we hope you've enjoyed this episode as much as we have. So for me, Don Dalton, I wish you a perfect intuitive experience.
And I'm David Deere. Trust your gut.
It burns! It burns! Damn chili dogs.